You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report. Where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
It is Friday, March 4th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is Casual Friday, folks. Those of you on the Sammy Cam can see that I'm not wearing my normal stiff collar shirt, but rather more of a sports shirt. And I'm not wearing my normal V-neck sweater, but rather a cardigan, a zipper cardigan on Friday. Folks, we're going to break format just a little bit today because we have an extra guest with us today, Bill McKibben, one of the nation's leading environmental writers and authors, founder of 350.org, will be on the program. And among other things we had planned to talk about, last night, or yesterday, I should say, a jury found the environmental activist Tim DeChristopher guilty of both federal charges in interfering with an oil and gas lease auction. And we'll talk to Bill McKibben about that, get more on that story. And as always, though, on Friday, well, not always. Actually, some days we upgrade. But as always on Fridays, we have someone, we have Chris Rosen. On most days, when we can't find somebody better, we have Chris Rosen from MovieLine.com to come in and give me film suggestions for the weekend on streaming Netflix or on demand. But I don't even know if I have on demand anymore on my cable. So I guess it would also be on demand or Amazon on demand because I got a Roku. That could be a new development since Chris Rosen was on. But you know what that means? It's time to play Chris Rosen's theme song brought to you by Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Reefer Cake's got to ask. He said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job. There
you go. The only guest that we have on this program to get a theme song. Welcome once again, Chris Rosen, senior editor of MovieLine.com.
It's great to be back, Sam. I'm very excited.
Oh, we're very, very, very excited to have
you. It's been a couple of weeks. I mean, you know, you get A-list talent like Doug Benson in there. And then, you know, you don't need me. But I'm glad he wasn't available.
You know, so. I mean, if we got B-list talent. We probably wouldn't.
I mean, if you had A-list talent, and by A-list I mean any list, then you'd probably be better
right,
off.
As in any list.
A-list.
Yes.
Like
maybe not even talent,
A-list.
Actually. Maybe not even talent. You know, I'll tell you, I cannot tell you, one of the greatest source of emails are people who write me and say, how can you take advice on movies or TV from a guy who's never seen Battlestar Galactica?
We're still talking about effing Battlestar Galactica? I'll watch it, folks. I was too busy watching Lost and all the other shit that was way more popular.
Oh, I see. So you just go to whatever's popular. So what do we
not
hear
whatever's
about?
Popular,
with stars
but I mean,
today,
when you write for a, you know, Sam, you, like you have to, you know this as a radio host yourself. You gotta play the hits. You have to like really, no. You know, what your audience wants to do.
I don't do that.
Well, that's what makes you better than everyone.
Right, and also maintains a very exclusive audience.
That's right. You want to keep that exclusivity of the audience.
That's
so.
Correct. It's basically it. I'm not convinced that our audience is just me. I go home. I fire up the podcast, and I enjoy everything I hear.
I listen too. So you got two.
Oh, all right, fine. I notice you haven't joined as a member, but that's not important. Listen, I know you're buying all your stuff through our Amazon.com link.
Yes, yes.
Okay, so, Chris Rosen, tell me, what should I play on my Roku? Did you know I got a Roku?
I didn't, and now you kind of threw me off, and we're not allowed to do on-demand.
Well, we can do on-demand this week, but the upshot is that I can also do on-demand through Amazon, which is going to open up, I think, a lot more.
Yeah, or I mean, doesn't the Roku play iTunes also?
No, it doesn't play iTunes.
Oh,
I've got to figure out some type of hack for that. I don't know. I'm going to try and figure that out.
Because that would be fun too, because you know you can rent movies on iTunes.
Well, yeah, you can rent movies on Amazon.com. Are you not aware of that?
Okay, I was, but sure.
No, you weren't aware of that, were you?
I wasn't. Rent like new releases on Amazon.com?
What's that? Can you rent what?
New releases on Amazon.com.
I don't know. I haven't looked into it too much.
All right. Well, then this one you might not.
That would be a good thing
watch.
For the guy from MovieLine.com.
Well, I didn't know you. I didn't know what you were throwing an Amazon wrench into my thing here.
Well, I'm just saying in general. I mean,
okay,
I think
well,
do your job. Yeah. People probably would want to know that.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
But anyway, this one is on demand, and it might also be on Amazon. But since it's a fairly new release, I'm not sure. I have to check their thing, so I will check it.
Hey,
next week.
Have we even talked since the Oscars?
We have not.
Okay, well, give me your picks, and then if we have time, we'll talk Oscars.
Okay, first pick I wanted to pick was 127 Hours, which came out this week. It was Oscar-nominated last weekend.
Wait, is that on demand or Netflix?
It is on demand. I don't know if it's on, you know, Amazon or anything. But it's a fabulous movie. James Franco, obviously, is the lead. It's based on the book Between a Rock and a Hard Place by Aaron Ralston. If you don't know the story, he was an adventurer, kind of just like a regular schmuck. He goes out and he ends up hiking by himself and he gets trapped his right arm underneath a giant boulder. And I mean, I'll tell you something. You know, it's a spoiler, but whatever. You know what happens because the guy's still alive. So you can figure it out.
I am so psyched to see that movie.
I got to say, it was, first of all, it's a little, I mean, obviously it's a little graphic because they show like.
Well,
him,
look, yeah, this, you don't have to get into it.
But. It's a great movie, and Franco, I don't really like James Franco, but he is outstanding in it.
Like, why don't
is,
you like James Franco?
I just think his whole attitude, I just, you know, he's
I love
so
his attitude. I think his attitude is great.
I'm not a big fan.
I'm a big fan. You
I
know,
love
he optioned Stephen Elliott's book.
He does a lot of great stuff, but I mean, I've just been kind of, he's been losing a little steam for me. But he's great in this. The guy should, he really was better than Colin Firth.
You know, I can imagine that when you see guys who are as good looking as James Franco and myself, that it really burns you.
Guy's good looking. No arguments here.
Yes.
But anyway, 127
Believe
hours.
Me,
great movie.
I understand the resent that comes from people.
So yes, I very much liked 127 hours. Great.
Okay, hopefully I can rent that
hopefully
on Amazon.
Hopefully, still have on demand. We have to talk. How do you not have on demand anymore? Do you not have cable anymore?
We
or
got
you got
rid
of it because of the Roku?
We got rid of the cable. We got rid of the
okay,
cable. It's not a big
fine.
Deal. It's nothing. Everything's
then,
fine. Don't worry, folks.
The reason I wanted to make sure that when you see that, because that's a legitimate movie. The other movie I had for you this week was based off of the nonsensical Charlie Sheen stuff. I was looking through Netflix Instant Watch, and they just added, you know, good job out of them. They just added The Chase with Charlie Sheen to Netflix Instant Watch. Now, have you ever seen that movie?
Don't make me mad.
Have you ever seen it?
No.
Charlie Sheen, this is 1994 Charlie Sheen, so he was still a crazy person, but we didn't realize how crazy he was. And he was also kind of famous back then. He's in this movie. It's a great movie, actually.
Is
it's
it?
Really trashy. I liked it a lot. I mean, it's fun. I saw it, you know, as a teenager, but I still like it. You know, he's a bank robber. Here's the story. It's such an old story. He's a bank robber. Oh, I'm getting bombed. All right. Hang on. It's coming.
Yeah, you can
I'm
going to
wipe off my
now.
Computer. And I thought it was a great movie. It was fun. And I also thought another – you could double feature that to show the dangers of addiction if you wanted. There's also Less Than Zero is also on Netflix Instant Watch.
You know what I think I'd rather watch? I don't know if it's on Netflix's streaming, but if I'm going to watch anything that involves Sheen and Bank Robber, I'm going to watch Badlands with Martin Sheen.
Oh, okay. Well, you can probably do that. I don't know if that's on streaming. I didn't look.
That's a
great movie. I love Martin Sheen. You can just watch old West Wings.
Yeah, no.
The guy's awesome.
No, no. God. I can't believe I say Badlands and you say West Wing.
I said Badlands is great. You could also watch West Wing.
What are you doing? Are you Lawrence O'Donnell like pays you money to pump?
No, he doesn't pay me money.
All right.
Aaron just do it for free. Pays me money.
All right, so quick. We got 2 more minutes. Tell me about the Oscars.
No, it was awful. I thought it was a total bore. I thought the two of them were terrible hosts.
It's always a total bore. I mean,
well, this year I thought it was particularly bad. They were terrible hosts because they were complete mismatches, and it never worked. And if they were going to make that a bit, they should have made that a bit, but they never did. So
I don't even know what you're talking about.
You thought it was good.
No, I don't. I didn't really. I think I tuned in right at the end because somebody.
Because you didn't even watch it. That's why you don't know what I'm talking about.
No, I was asking about who won. I know who won.
Oh, who won?
Like,
well, the King's Speech won, but I didn't think.
English Patient, right? Didn't that win?
King's Speech.
English Patient?
No, no. Might as well have.
It's the same movie, right? Isn't it always the same movie with them?
It was not very good, The King's Speech.
Whenever the Weinstein brothers do a movie about like a period piece about England, that wins. Isn't that what the formula is?
Either a period piece about England or a period piece about a possible Nazi sympathizer, which both The English Patient and The King's Speech probably kind of were.
The good thing I heard was that the guy who won the documentary about
Inside Job
had a
very
good
nice that it
comment.
Won. And he got a great comment, which is good. And he was, you know, ashamed that he was the only person who thought of making any kind of political statement the entire night.
Unbelievable that nobody mentioned the union stuff in Wisconsin. That's
nothing.
Really shocking to me. I mean, and
nothing.
There was one, I guess, DP who mentioned it in the back or something.
I guess maybe after, you know, in the thank you cam they have. Is that what you mean? I didn't even see that on.
There are some people in Hollywood I have a tremendous amount of respect for because they leverage their hollow celebrity to actually do something good. You know, Matt Damon was on Piers Morgan,
yeah,
somebody told me the other night, talking about Citizens United. You know, when whether or not you like the movie that Bullworth, what's his face did?
Warren Beatty.
Yeah, Warren Beatty. I mean, you know, here's a guy. He leverages his fame and his celebrity to put some type of message out there, whether it's, you know, it's good or not, or it's convoluted. I happen to like it, but you know, I like to see the effort by people who have sort of just. And this isn't a hard thing for people to do. They all belong to a union,
right?
So.
See, not one real political anything.
Now, if you followed my Twitter feed, you would have seen that I posted a link to one of the greatest awards show moments I think that I've ever seen, which was it was actually a comedic one. Nichols and May, that comedy team back in the day, I guess it was the Emmys or something like that, but they come up and they gave Elaine May announced an award for mediocrity. And Nichols came out of the audience as the winner. And I thought that was like, he's like, you know, there's so many people who make, you know, there's so many people who get awards for making great TV, but I represent a lot more people who just come in and just try and do their job and don't care about the quality of what they're doing. And that was a great moment. All right. So, Chris Rosen, I think this was a, you know, fairly decent segment. I'm glad we had to rush it.
I'm glad, too. This is good. I love the new setup, too. The mic looks great. So.
Oh, well, I'm glad you like it. All right. Well, Chris Rosen, thanks for joining us. And we got to take a break. When we come back, we will be talking to Bill McKibben, the founder of 350.org, one of the nation's premier environmental writers. And like I said, we're going to be talking about this story of the just convicted environmental activist, a guy named Timothy DeChristopher, and we'll talk to Bill McKibben about that. We'll be right back after this.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to this program for the first time Bill McKibben, an American environmentalist and writer, considered one of the nation's leading environmentalists. He is the author of many books, including The End of Nature, The Age of Missing Information, Hope, Human, and Wild. He is also the one of the founders of 350.org. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Good to be with you, Sam.
So, you know, there was a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about, but there has been some breaking news over the past 24 hours since we booked you, and I would love to talk about this. I know you are you've been following this case quite closely. Timothy DeChristopher, he is an environmental activist. He's just been found guilty of interfering with an onshore oil and gas leasing, with the onshore oil and gas leasing act. Tell us about this.
Tim's a good fellow. He's from the state of Utah, and there in Utah, inspired, you know, by the ghost of Ed Abbey and the very real presence of people like Terry Tempest Williams, he did something spontaneous and I think pretty funny and creative. He went into one of these oil and gas leasing auctions that the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, runs, and he picked up a paddle and he bid on a number of parcels of oil and gas leases that the federal government was auctioning off, and he won them. He didn't actually have the millions of dollars that he needed to pay for them, and it, you know... So it slowed down through a little sand in the gears of this operation, which, you know, is against the law and also in many ways a very useful thing to be doing, since we need desperately, for climate reasons, to keep that carbon in the ground. But yesterday, the federal government brought the full and awesome weight of its power to bear on him. He was convicted on two felony counts in a Utah courtroom. He faces 10 years in jail when he's sentenced in June. So, you know, in a country in which we've managed to indict precisely zero bankers for their role in pretty much upending the world's economy, we can be proud that our federal judiciary under Attorney General Holder has managed to at least get the scalp of one person who slowed down for a few days the efficient selling off of our landscape to the highest bidder.
We actually have a clip of his speech that he gave after the trial, and we'll play that at the end of this interview. So what are the implications of this for the broader movement? I mean, do you think that, I mean, it was interesting because one of the things I wanted to talk to you about was your piece that you had written about money pollution. And let's segue into that for a moment if we could, because you wrote this piece about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And just give me some background on that. You talk about the amazing influence it has because of its money.
Yeah, this guy, you know, if money pollution were a visible phenomenon, the biggest smokestack would be on top of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce building, directly across the street from the White House. These guys boast about spending more money on lobbying than anybody else in Congress. They do lots of things with it. They helped fight the health care plan, for instance, but an awful lot of their attention goes to making sure that the planet warms up as quickly as possible. Just as one small example, they filed a series of briefs with the EPA last year demanding that they take no action on climate, because if, as they pointed out, the planet warmed, human populations could adapt their physiology and behavior in order to deal with the extra heat. These guys are far out and far right and far powerful. And so, yes, I'd written a piece explaining this, and that, among other things, seemed to have been enough to earn our group, 350.org, a a spanking from Glenn Beck last Friday night. Up on his famous board went our logo, and next to it, curiously, a hammer and sickle.
Yes.
Something I hadn't really, I mean, there's a kind of, I don't know what, archaic quality to the idea that your opponents are communists. We're clearly his opponents, but you know what we're for are businesses nimble enough to adapt to the new world, which is supposed to be the great virtue of capitalism, and not businesses that require endless subsidy and protection from the federal government so they can keep doing dangerous things forever.
Yeah, I wanted to congratulate you on making it to the chalkboard. That's quite a feat because you know, Glenn Beck is so crazy that at least he's, you know, it's sometimes impressive just to see that he actually has the capacity to absorb that there are certain organizations out there that aren't completely fanciful. So at least at the very least, we know that he's on some type of wavelength. And I wanted to also just to congratulate you on having your own new flag, I guess, the hammer and the sickle.
There you go.
But is it a slight change in strategy and tactics? And we're at a time where there was with a democratically controlled Congress, both a House and a Senate, with a democratically controlled executive branch, we were unable to pass any type of climate change legislation, whether or not it was even anemic by the end of that process.
Yeah. Look, clearly the methods that the big environmental groups were using didn't work. And, you know, for 20 years, there's basically been this kind of elite strategy. We're going to work a little bit behind closed doors on these complicated schemes like cap and trade, and we'll, you know, co-opt enough of the business guys, and we'll convince enough of the elites that it's in their interest, and we'll give Goldman Sachs enough skin in the game, and we'll get something through. Whether or not it was a sound strategy, in the end, it was a failed one. I mean, the Senate last year refused to even vote on that cap-and-trade bill, and then we saw what happened in November's elections. That strategy is over. If we're going to get anything done about the biggest problem we've ever faced, we're going to have to go from the grassroots and build mass movements that take real, that build real political power, that don't pussyfoot around. And part of that is, you know, these kind of big campaigns we're running across the country about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce this year. They're going to be already thousands and thousands of businesses coming out to declare the U.S. Chamber doesn't speak for me. We can't take their money, but we can soften up their political credibility. And part of it's going to be more militant tactics, like what Tim DeChristopher did. I don't think that's anywhere near the last of this kind of civil disobedience you'll see. In fact, it's not the first. I mean, 3 weeks ago, Wendell Berry, probably our greatest living writer in this country, sat in the governor's office in Frankfort, Kentucky, until the governor agreed to at least go look at the devastation caused by coal mining in his commonwealth. Time to step up this fight. We're losing. We're losing badly. The Arctic's halfway melted. There's really not much reason to wait much longer, I think.
And specifically about the you know, writing about the idea of the chamber who the title of your piece from Tom's Dispatch is Money Pollution. It's interesting to me because people like Lawrence Lessig have been out there for 3 or 4 years now, arguing that at the end of the day, our political system is fundamentally dysfunctional because of the influence of major corporate money. And
yep.
I wonder if there isn't a coalescence of similarly like-minded activists across the spectrum of issues starting to coalesce around this notion that nothing will get done unless in some way we can depollute our government of this big corporate money.
Well, Sam, I think that I think that that's probably true. I also think that it's very hard to take it on as an issue in the kind of abstract sense. I think it's when people see it wrecking the chances for something that they care about, in this case, dealing with the largest environmental problem we've ever faced, that it begins to really come into context. There hasn't been a kind of mass groundswell around money and politics in the way one might have hoped. And maybe if we work at it by talking about precisely what it is doing, we can get there through almost through that back door.
Interesting. And tell us just a little bit about 350.org. I'm not sure if everyone in my audience is familiar with
350. It's a weird name for a group, and it takes its name from what the scientists at NASA told us 3 years ago was the most carbon we could safely have in the atmosphere, 350 parts per million. We took it as our name partly because it's scientifically the most important number in the world now. We're already at 390, way past it. That's why we're seeing the funky weather that we're seeing. But we also took it because Arabic numerals translate across linguistic boundaries, and we needed to do global organizing. I mean, they call it global warming for a reason. And we've been pretty successful at that. Though we have essentially nothing in the way of resources, we managed last year, for instance, on one day in October, to have 7,400 demonstrations in 189 countries, what CNN called the most widespread day of political action in the planet's history. So we're at least beta testing the idea that there's room for a mass movement around the need to change, to get off fossil fuel. It's exciting to see it happening, especially since most of the support comes from people in places that we wouldn't ordinarily think of as environmental. I mean, mostly we work with poor black, brown, Asian young people around the world because that's mostly what there are, you know. It's very exciting to see. It's also very sad to say that we are still losing and losing pretty dramatically, and we're going to need to make this thing much bigger and stronger if we have any hope of standing up to the financial power of the most profitable enterprise humans have ever engaged in, the fossil fuel industry. There's no guarantee we're going to win this. If you were betting, you probably wouldn't bet our way, but that's really not a bet you're allowed to make considering the stakes. So we're going to fight as hard as we can and at the very least give these guys a little pause in their fat cat heyday, you know?
Here's one of the things that makes it very hard for me to contemplate environmental issues. When do we know, and what if we have already lost? I mean, to a certain extent,
it's all relative, right? We've already raised temperature 1 degree, and the scientists tell us we've got another degree in the pipeline from carbon we've already emitted. So the planet's going to be a much warmer place than it's ever been during human civilization. And that's going to be difficult. In fact, really difficult. It's going to be a difficult century. No way around it. We got a taste of it last year with the floods in Pakistan and the fires in Russia and the run-up of food prices. What the scientists also tell us is if we don't take action pretty fast, really fast, before the century is out, before it's halfway out, we're looking at 5, 6, 7 degrees. That's not difficult. That's probably impossible. Probably the first thing that will really challenge our ability to continue having civilizations in the way that we've known them. So those are the stakes, and we don't know exactly at any given moment where along the line we are, but all you have to do is sort of look at the satellite pictures of the Earth and see the Arctic getting more blue and less white every year, and you've got a pretty good visual correlation for just how screwed we are.
Yeah, I mean, I've been somewhat of a James Lovelock fetishist to a certain extent, who is a scientist who found the hole in the ozone layer, and he feels that we may be past that point of no return, and what we'll be looking at on some level is not the end of humanity, but the end of civilization as we know it. And
I'd say it's a very real possibility unless we get our act together really fast.
Right.
And that's what we're desperately trying to do. And we really need everybody look, there is, in the end, no other issue. If we don't get this one solved and solved fast, and everything else that we work on is moot. And that's why the stakes are so high and the urgency is so strong, and it's why there's going to be a lot more people willing to do what Tim DeChristopher did.
And at the end of the day, what we're talking about here is not something that can be done in terms of just simply changing individual behavior. This has to happen on a policy level, doesn't it, the changes?
That's right. That's right. You have to, you have to stop letting the fossil fuel industry put carbon into the atmosphere for free. I mean, Exxon's business model is we get to use the atmosphere as an open sewer for free. That's why they made more money last year than any company in the history of money, you know. And changing that is the sine qua non of doing anything about this, and that's where the fight is. That's what the oil and coal companies are so far been able to prevent happening. And, you know, they've got the lead because they've got the money. We better find a different currency to work in, and I think bodies and spirit and creativity are about the only currencies we've got, so we better put them to use.
Bill McKibben of 350.org, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. God bless, brother.
Thank you.
Take care.
As we say goodbye, we will run that audio from Timothy D. Christopher, his pronouncement after being basically found guilty and sentenced, we don't know yet, but possibly up to 10 years of prison. This is him outside of the courtroom just yesterday in Utah.
Wanted to see was how you would react. And you all have reacted with joy and resolve. You've shown that your power will not be intimidated by any power that they have. And that's the most important thing that has happened here this week. Because everything that went on inside that building tried to convince me that I was alone and that I was weak. They tried to convince me that I was like a little finger out there on my own that can easily be broken. And all of you out here were the reminder for all of us that I wasn't just a finger all alone in there, but that I was connected to a hand with many fingers that could unite as one fist. And that fist could not be broken by the power that they have in there. That fist is not a symbol of violence. That this is a symbol that we will not be misled into thinking we are alone. We will not be lied to and told we are weak. We will not be divided and we will not back down. That this is a symbol that we are connected and that we are powerful. It's a symbol that we hold true to our vision of a healthy and just world, and we are building the self-empowering movement to make it happen. All those authorities in there wanted me to think like a finger, but our children are calling to us to think like a fist. And we know that now I'll have to go to prison. We know that now that's the reality, but that's just the job that I have to do. That's the role that I face, and many before me have gone to jail for justice, and if we're going to achieve our vision, many after me will have to join me as well.
Be there.
All right, folks, so that's the show today. You can join me on the flip side for the members-only show. Of course, if you're listening live, you'll be able to hear the entirety of the flip side. And you can IM me at majority.fm. At majority.fm. We will see you, for you non-members, we'll see you next week. Got some great guests coming up next week. Know you're going to enjoy the show. Stick around for the flip side. Hey, folks, as I always say, your membership is the only thing that will ensure we can keep doing this daily show. So please, if you can do it, join today at majority.fm. Not only will you help support the show and keep it alive, but you'll also get an extra 50 minutes a day of programming. Plus, you're going to get all sorts of other bonus membership gifts and some swag. So what's not to love? But if you still are holding out, you can help the show by doing virtually nothing in other ways. Head to Majority.fm, find the Majority FM Amazon.com graphic, click on it, bookmark it, buy goods from Amazon as you normally would. You will absolutely notice no difference. But meanwhile, you'll be redistributing wealth from a corporate behemoth, Amazon, to the independent media you listen to daily, the Majority Report. It's simple, and it really, really helps. So please, if you can do it, do it. And buy your goods from our Amazon link right now and help support the media you love.